Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Human-Animal Connection Show, where we believe we can communicate with all animals. Join us as we explore the 33 principles and healing methods of the human-animal connection. As animal lovers, we know that you share our commitment to making the world a kinder place for all creatures. Together, let's embrace the transformative healing power of the human-animal connection.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Human-Animal Connection Podcast. I have a really good show for you today. It's kind of a special topic, not the easiest topic, but sometimes we like to tackle subjects that aren't so easy on this show since we do so many warm and fuzzy shows. And we're going to be talking about behavioral euthanasia, euthanizing a dog because of behavioral issues. And my special guest is Meredith Tullison. She is an animal communicator and also a behavioral trainer. So she has seen this issue from many sides and many angles and has felt it deeply and personally in her life. And she's going to kind of tell us her thoughts about this. So Meredith, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jeannie. It's always a pleasure to be here with you.
Yeah, great. Well, all right. Where shall we start? Let's give the, in case the audience isn't familiar, let's explain some of the behaviors that might lead to a decision of euthanasia based upon behaviors.
There's a myriad of terrible situations that could require someone to make the decision for behavioral euthanasia. You know, it could be cases of aggression towards other animals, towards people, towards children within the home. It could be that, there are animals who truthfully are so ill mentally that they just can't be, I don't want to say trusted, but it's dangerous to have them in a home. You know, as animal professionals and as animal lovers, we all want to believe that every single dog, cat, horse, lizard, whatever, can fit happily into a human world. Mm-hmm. And some of these beautiful creatures are not able to do that. And it's such a difficult topic because if you've got a perfectly physically healthy animal, a lot of people can't accept the fact that behavioral euthanasia is even an option. Mm-hmm. And it's anyone who's been through it mm-hmm. knows. Anyone who has not might not yet have the personal experience yeah. to understand that sometimes this is absolutely necessary and actually more humane for the animal.
Right. Yeah, I've been on both sides of that equation. You know, I've been on the not understanding it. And then I've been in a situation with a foster animal from a shelter where that was what had to happen. And so I've really seen it from all sides. Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's very challenging because some people are even struggle with euthanasia, period. Even cases where dogs are physically ill or suffering or in pain. Just the notion of, do I have the right to make a choice? You know, do I have the right to play God? And of course, and as animal communicators, you and I both are animal communicators. We've talked with animals and they are not as attached to the bodies as we are. You know, I equate it as like going through the doggy door, you know, it's like from one world to another. So it's for some people, just euthanasia is challenging, but then they could understand it if there's physical pain, physical illness, suffering, not quality of life. But here we're talking about dogs who are physically healthy, but not mentally and emotionally healthy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, tell us a little bit about your experience. If you don't, I know this is not an easy subject to share. It takes a lot of guts to talk about something like this, because this is not pretty. It's not pretty to be in this situation. So, but would you like to share your story, what happened and why you made this decision?
I'll be happy to. It is a difficult conversation. It is a difficult topic. I'm almost 3 years into having, unfortunately, had the very personal experience of behavioral euthanasia in my own home. And I've been through it with clients. And I think that I have a special, particular way to offer myself to clients who are going through such a thing because of my personal experience. I wouldn't wish it on anyone, but having been through it, I've learned a whole lot. So I will you know, I'm kind of verbose, so I'll try and share a little bit of my story. And I'm sharing this in the hopes that I can be of some service and comfort to other people who might find themselves unexpectedly in this situation, because it is always unexpected.
Yeah.
Okay. So almost 11 years ago, I adopted two puppies. Their names are Quentin and Barnabas. At the time, I had two older dogs. These are all black lab mixes, who were strays who we took into our home. Vader and Zod were my older dogs, and they were definitely getting up in years. And Vader started having seizures when he was about 13. We were concerned. He and Zod had never been apart, and we were concerned about how Zod would respond after Vader's death. So we decided we should get Zod a puppy, you know, as we often do. But we weren't going to go look for one. We were going to wait for one to find us. Well, shortly thereafter, a dear friend had an unexpected litter of puppies. Mom was a full-blooded chocolate lab, relatively young, and Dad was, I don't know, a traveling man. We're not quite sure who Dad was. But our neighbor called and said, we've just had 9 puppies, all of them, one solid black, one solid white, and the rest of them, some version of black and white. We know you love black animals, so would you like to come meet them? And we said, of course, we'll come meet them. And of the 9 puppies, the first one that toddled out was Barnabas, the solid black one with his big, fat little puppy belly and his little pink tongue. And we said, this is him. This is the one. And then what do you know? Out from under this ottoman crawls this tiny little shy puppy with this enormous white paw. And I, of course, fell in love with him. So we accidentally ended up with 2.
Okay.
and then Vader lived another year and a half. Mm-hmm. I think he felt like he needed to take it upon himself to try and help train these puppers.
Mm-hmm.
And he stuck around for a while. Ultimately, he did pass, and then Zod not long thereafter. At about 6 months old, Quentin and Barnabas got into a terrible fight.
Mm-hmm.
We had been through training, and I'm in Mississippi. We have a lot of very old school trainers. You know, there was a lot of force-based training, et cetera. And there was something in me that just said, this is not going to suit these puppies.
Mm-hmm.
But I went through it anyway because I didn't know any better at the time.
Mm-hmm.
They started fighting each other. And I mean, terrible, horrible fights, stitches and staples and tears and slobber and everything else, just awful. But then they would crawl up on the sofa together and lick each other's wounds. It's just like they played off of each other very, very strongly. When it was just the two of them, and after about the third really good fight in the first year, I contacted my trainer, who essentially told me it was all my fault. That I had not trained them properly, that I had not socialized them properly. And we socialized this stew out of these dogs. I mean, we really did. We tried to take them everywhere and give them good experiences with lots and lots of different things. So I broke up with my trainer. She hurt my feelings really, really badly. And that's when I went and started studying to become a certified dog trainer,
mm-hmm.
Which is another complicated aspect of the story, because here I am, a dog trainer, many years later, an animal communicator, and I was at a complete loss with these two.
Yeah.
At a complete loss. But we did it for 9 years. Our role got smaller and smaller. Mm-hmm. The puppers couldn't go anywhere. We couldn't travel because they were not allowed to board. They weren't allowed to play with any other animals. We stopped walking in the neighborhood before they were a year old. So it was basically just our home and our backyard. But even
and
that...
What was going on that you had to do that narrowing? I know they were fighting with each other, but what was happening out when you took them out?
Quentin was so reactive that he would, I truly believe it was a lot of fear reactivity, mm-hmm. But he was so reactive. If we saw a cat, another dog, a person, a car, a UPS truck, anything, he would just go nuts. And then the two of them would redirect on each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it reached the point, even with just their experience in our backyard, that everything was an emergency. If a squirrel ran down the fence, if a bird landed in the yard, God forbid a neighbor's cat had mm-hmm. had come over to visit. It even reached the point we had a young couple that we shared a fence with, their backyard backed up to our backyard, and they had dogs. And for over a year, we texted each other every time one of us needed to take the dogs out because they couldn't be on opposite sides of the fence.
Wow. Yeah.
I did not realize the level of personal anxiety and fear that it was causing in me. We couldn't have people over to the house. You know, we had neighbors with small children that were afraid to come over. Not that either of them ever went after a person, except me, because I foolishly tried to get between them in many fights. Mm-hmm. But everything was a possible emergency.
Yeah.
And then they went after one of our cats. Mm-hmm. We had five cats in the house at the time. Unfortunately, over the course of a couple of years, they killed two of our cats.
Wow.
And one night they went after a third.
Mm.
And I said, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I can do. I realized I had reached the point where I would come home from work just questioning whether everyone would still be alive and okay in the house, whether there would be blood or fur or mm-hmm. any of these things. So I have a lot of wonderful support in the animal world, and I contacted an amazing behaviorist that I've trained with in the past, Trish McMillan, more on her later.
Okay.
But contacted her, did several consultations, contacted every vet I know, every trainer that I had access to, and really, really struggled with, what I had to do at this point.
Yeah.
And ultimately, after taking over a week off work just to stay home and make sure everyone stayed alive over the course mm-hmm. of the day, I realized that the more humane thing to do would be to let Quentin go.
Mm-hmm. Was Quentin more of the instigator in these situations than Barnabas? So that was clear that there was a difference. Yeah,
it was clear. And it was clear that he was the most reactive.
Mm-hmm.
Barnabas is not without blame, because he would redirect, he would get in the middle of it, but they really played off of each other
mm-hmm.
to a great extent. But it was obviously Quentin that was struggling the most. So I'm very fortunate to have my oldest, dearest friend, who is my veterinarian, who also lives across the street and who could come to our home
mm-hmm.
and make a euthanasia, a good death, as good as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And even in this situation, there are a lot of veterinarians who are very opposed to behavioral euthanasia and say, you should try something else. If you've done it all, can you rehome him? We could not responsibly rehome him mm-hmm. because of his behaviors. So on the day that my friend came over, we gave Quentin a big spoonful of peanut butter mm-hmm. while he waited for the sedation.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized in that moment that was the very first time in over 9 years that I had ever seen this dog truly relax.
Wow. Yeah.
So I gave him the whole jar. I gave him the whole jar of peanut butter. And there he was with his entire long snoot up in that jar of peanut butter. And I wept. I wept for so many reasons mm-hmm. and realized in that moment that, yes, this was a terrible thing. It was a horrible experience to have to go through. But it was the most humane option for Quentin. He had never been comfortable in his own skin, had never been comfortable in his own body. Mm-hmm. And this moment, only moments before his passing, was the first time that he ever truly relaxed.
And that was with the first sedation, the first shot. Yeah.
Yes.
The space between the first sedation and the second. Yes. It's quite a powerful, beautiful time. Yeah.
It is. It is. In the couple of years since then, Barnabas is the only dog left in the house. We've gone from four black dogs and five black cats to one dog and two cats, which is a very reasonable number for people to have. And Barnabas's life has gotten much, much bigger.
Uh-huh.
He did develop pretty severe separation anxiety because he'd never lived alone. You know, he'd never not had another dog in his life. But we've learned to manage that. We go on walks in the neighborhood. We have play dates. We have other dogs that come over to our house to play. He goes to off-leash daycare and plays all day long. He's almost 12 years old, and he runs and romps and plays all day, every day.
Yes.
So there's the flip side of the coin.
Yeah.
Barnabas's life was very, very small because of his brother.
Right.
And now his life is huge, and I'm committed to just making his senior years as beautiful as possible. And the relationship that we have developed is incredible.
How long after Quentin passed did Barnabas come around and start becoming himself? And
it was several months. But I will admit that as much of that was me as it was him, because I was terrified. I was terrified. I scheduled him for a private consultation with a dear friend here who's a beautiful positive reinforcement trainer. Mm-hmm. I signed him up for puppy kindergarten, and he and I went to a group class with puppies. And here he was, 9 years old, this old man up there in mm-hmm. kindergarten. But I did that as a reinforcement for him and as a bonding experience for us.
Yeah.
And then we did some agility courses for fun. Uh-huh. And then I decided that I needed to find a way to make him as comfortable as possible during the day so that my husband and I could actually leave and go to work. And so we tested out this off-leash daycare. And the very first day that I dropped him off, of course, I cried like someone, mom dropping kid off at kindergarten, because right. I was so afraid. And they assured me, we'll introduce him to one bulletproof dog, and then we'll introduce him to another. And if the three of them do okay, we'll let them play a little bit.
Yeah.
I got tied up at work and left him much, much longer the first day than I had intended to. And when I went to pick him up, they have a big screen TV in the lobby. And they're like, look at this. He was in the middle of the baby pool, surrounded by 20, 30 dogs, holding court and having the time of his life. So he came around pretty quickly as soon as I opened up the opportunity for him to do so, because I was so afraid.
Yes.
I was so afraid.
Yes. Okay. Well, we're going to take a short little break, and when we come back, maybe you could help other people who might be questioning if they are in a situation where they need to consider this and what are the things to look for. So we'll be right back in just a moment.
You know the expression, cats have nine lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Hey friends, if you like what you're hearing and want to learn more, check out Dr. Joseph's book, The Human-Animal Connection, Deepening Relationships with Animals and Ourselves. Or visit the website, thehumananimalconnection.org, to book an online consultation. Thank you for loving animals. Now back to the show.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Human-Animal Connection. My guest is Meredith Tullison. She is an animal communicator and a behavioral trainer. And we're talking about a difficult subject, the subject of behavioral euthanasia. So, Meredith, I know that you and I are not the only people to have faced this issue. So what are the things that you could give people as a kind of a reasonable way to evaluate this? If they're wondering, what do you think? What are some of the signs that behavioral euthanasia may be warranted and that it's time? And, you know, how can people look at this horrible decision, difficult decision?
A lot of the things that I said in my own personal story, the level of reactivity, the level of anxiety that I felt personally in dealing with trying to manage my two dogs and make them as happy as possible. If someone's feeling that, I highly recommend that they consult a professional.
Mm-hmm.
I have multiple dear friends here in my area who are veterinarians, and I contacted every one of them. And sadly, every one of them said, you know, they don't give us a lot of behavior training in vet school. So what we know is from our own personal experience. There are some amazing veterinary behaviorists out there. As I mentioned, I worked with Trish McMillan. I did some training with her, working with aggressive dogs years ago. And so she's the primary behaviorist that I reached out to because I had a personal relationship with her at that time. She was incredible. incredibly supportive. She unfortunately had been through this situation herself,
mm-hmm.
With a puppy that growled at her when he was 3 weeks old. She knew then that there was something wrong, and she worked with him for 18 months. And then he had her and her boyfriend cornered in the house, like ready to attack them. That's a terrible experience, and I'm glad that that never happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
But she created a remarkable community on Facebook called Losing Lulu. Mm-hmm. And I highly suggest that anyone who is facing this possibility or has been through this experience, find that Facebook group. It's a members-only group. You have to request to join. And they're very, very strong in their desire for it to be a safe and supportive place to share your stories. Mm-hmm. There's so much grief and there's so much shame in this experience.
Mm-hmm.
As an animal professional, can you imagine my sense of failure?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And truth is, I stopped taking training clients at that mm-hmm. time because I thought, if I couldn't fix my own animal, who am I to expect someone to pay me for my professional services? You know?
Yeah.
So if you believe that you are facing a situation with a dog that could be dangerous or could be affecting your life in the way that this experience affected mine, please, please, please reach out to a professional. Reach out to a veterinary behaviorist. Reach out to a counselor for yourself.
Yes.
Because, you know, as you know, Jeannie, there are people who are going to criticize. You should have done more. You should have tried more. Okay. How can you kill a perfectly healthy animal? Mm-hmm. Well, we have to remember that this type of mental
illness
is an illness. And I am of the belief, I work with a lot of people who are in grief, who are making a decision about a medical euthanasia, an end-of-life decision for their animals. And I firmly believe that euthanasia is an incredible gift, a humane euthanasia. While it's so, so sad for us to have our animals leave their bodies, it's so much a gift that we can give them to keep them from having to suffer while dying. And God, I wish we could do it for our people.
Yep. I wish we could do it for people too. I wish we really had that. I know it's such a powerful experience, every phase of it. And I know Lulu, the dog that we fostered from the shelter, we knew that the dog, you know, had 12 pages of rap sheet of difficulties and fell in love anyway and thought I could handle it. Thought I had the skills and she made tremendous progress. But there was the day when, you know, she got a thorn in her foot. My housemate tried to take it off and she almost lost her thumb and, you know, ambulance and, you know, it was very severe. And she still, a year later, doesn't have full use of her hand. So, you know, this was, and I had to walk Lulu out to the truck for the sheriff and the animal control and, you know, fortunately, they let me come to the shelter for the euthanasia, but a shelter euthanasia is never easy and good. It's nothing comfortable or sweet or tender about it. Yeah. So to be able to do it at home is such a tremendous blessing. So I'm glad you had that. But I was so glad to be there with her and give her last whipped cream and, you know, spend a few moments. And I know I still work with her now. I still communicate with her. And tell us about communicating with Quentin since. How has your relationship been since?
Well, I say it took me a while.
Of course it does.
To communicate with him. It took me a while to ask him to come and work with me because I did feel so, I felt guilty. Mm-hmm. I felt like I had failed him. I felt even more guilty for feeling relieved.
Yeah.
On so many occasions, so many aspects of life with Barnabas that were easier. And I felt terrible going, oh God, if Quentin were here, this would be an emergency.
Right.
You know, Barnabas has decided which bank drive-thru is his favorite because he gets treats at the bank drive-thru. I could never have taken Quentin in the car like that.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So it took me a while to call him in. And I do say that Quentin is my muse, that Quentin is my biggest teacher. I named my training company Quintessential Dog Training because it was a little tribute to him. If not for Quentin, I wouldn't have gone and studied behavior. As I said, I'm not necessarily taking training clients anymore, but the knowledge that I gained in doing all of that coursework really comes in handy with my animal communication.
So
how do I communicate with Quentin? I call him in as a helper animal when I'm dealing with clients who are making difficult decisions. I call him in to remind me that I am strong, that I do have wisdom, that I can rely on the wisdom of animals to help me, and to also learn a lot about self-forgiveness.
Yeah.
A lot about, we have a joke in my family, digging his dog, you know, who's working the hardest, who's doing the most, who's pushing through a hard situation. And that's just part of my nature. I call Quentin in when I'm having those digging his dog moments and feel like I need to step back and let it go a little bit, you know? So he's still very powerful. Yeah. He's very powerful in my life.
And that's such a wonderful experience, the realization that not all animals are destined to live in physical human homes, in physical bodies, in human homes. You know, who knows how he would have been if he had been, you know, a street dog. So who knows? I mean, I don't know. But the point being is that now he has a rich life and can be with you in a way that's very profound, that he couldn't be in normal life. Like you said, you couldn't take him to ordinary places that you can now take Barnabas to. And there's a lot of freedom in being out of the body, you know. And as animal communicators, I think we're very lucky that you can talk to Quentin and I can talk to Lulu, and we can still have a very full and rich and ever-developing relationship. But I know that not everybody has that, and not everybody has that ability to communicate with animals. And this is where you really want to get some help. Call upon a good communicator. And the thing, like you mentioned, you had the first, I think the trainer or person that you went to was not helpful, you know, just filled you full of guilt and crap. And, you know, so if anybody fills you with guilt and crap, go to the next person, you know.
Absolutely.
Whether that's
just your gut. Yeah, that we're going to connect with. Here's an interesting tidbit. I love the way that you said some animals are not destined to live in this body, in the human world. In retrospect, as I mentioned, Quentin and Barnabas were two of nine puppies.
Mm-hmm.
When they were about 2 weeks old, mom dropped Quentin in the swimming pool.
Oh.
The people saw it and obviously rushed to rescue him.
Oh.
But isn't that an interesting thing?
Yes.
Mom had nine puppies, and that was just one too many. And this one?
Yes.
Maybe needed to be held.
And, back.
Yeah.
And pigs will do that. You know, like I've seen, you know, farm pigs, if there's one that's not quite right, the mother will do away with them. And it's scary and horrible to think about things like that, but it's like there's a wisdom there. You know, I think that in the wild, that's not uncommon if there's one that's not ready for the world.
Yeah. And to us, that seems perfectly awful. It seems so wild and so barbaric. And I just wonder, I think,
yeah,
if I had trusted her wisdom, if they had trusted her wisdom,
right,
had released Quentin from his torment years earlier, not only would it have been more humane for him, but how much different would Barnabas's life have been?
Yeah. It's a very interesting view to think not only about an individual life, but the pack life, you know, to the wisdom of the pack. You know, sometimes the individual gets sacrificed for the well-being of the pack. And as humans, this is pretty rough stuff for us. We don't like to have that kind of responsibility, but if we take the responsibility of bringing an animal into a human world, you know, into our home, having them domesticated, then we also have to be equally prepared for the exit strategy, I think, because in the wild, a sick or injured animal would go off to the mountaintop and the coyote would have them as lunch. That's what they would do. But because they're living in our houses, they can't go off to the mountaintop or the tree. And so it's the wildness of life, you know, and also just the recognition that being in a physical form isn't the only possibility of consciousness. that as animal communicators, we have the belief that consciousness extends beyond past physical form. So it's a little bit easier for us, but even you and I, even with all of our knowledge, we still went through the grief, we still went through the guilt, we still stopped training other people. We had to take a real time out, but our lives were torture. I mean, Lulu, when she was here in our house for 91 days, she destroyed all the Venetian blinds. You know, she scratches on all the tables. She would got on top of the dining room table. We'd come home and see, you know, it couldn't leave the house. You know, she had terrible separation anxiety. And I remember just like the first few days of leaving after she was gone, it's like, wow, I can close the door. I don't have to worry about what's going to be destroyed or what's going to happen when I leave. And it's pretty tough to have a dog where you're basically a prisoner of their emotional states. And like you said, not every issue can be trained out or fixed out or healed out or talked out. I mean, sometimes we're dealing with dogs whose wiring or chemistry, brain chemistry or whatever, is just not suitable for this world.
Yeah. Yeah. And while it was such a horrible experience, a horrible decision to have to make, and some of the experiences along the way were horrible. Friendships were suffering. My marriage was suffering. Everything was suffering. Not the least of which, Quentin was suffering. And I miss him every day. I miss his sweet moments. When he was good, he was very, very good. And when he was bad, he was horrid. I'm lucky in a way that there was no physical damage to me or anyone else other than the other animals. No damage to humans, physical damage. There was a lot of emotional damage.
Yes.
But we're all healing. We're all healing in a different way. And I know that there are so many people out there who are questioning such a thing. Mm-hmm. And I encourage everyone to find the support that you need, because it can happen. And sometimes it needs to happen. And I feel for anyone who's actually had a personal experience in this way, mm-hmm. because it's awful.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, that resource that you offered people up is called Lulu's Love.
Losing Lulu.
Oh, Losing Lulu. Losing Lulu. On Facebook. Losing Lulu. Yeah. And I have a video called Lulu's Love, which that's why I got confused. Yeah, that we made about Lulu. And yeah, well, I'm so delighted that you were willing to share a story. I know this hasn't been easy to even think about sharing it. It's a lot to heal, and it's a lot to offer up others. And we know that we want to help others who are in this situation. So reach out to Meredith or myself, or to give me the website one more, the Facebook again. One more.
Losing Lulu.
Losing Lulu on Facebook. Yeah. It's a private group that you can get a lot of support. And if you're being faced with this decision, and life can be easier if you're being held captive by, a relationship with an animal. So thank you, Meredith Tolleson, for being a guest here on the Human Animal Connection.
Thank you, Jeannie.
We'll see you again next time. Bye for now.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.